And our second guest today is Juan Passarelli. He is the producer of Trump's War on Journalism, documented in his new film. And he is in England, and apparently we're having some difficulty reaching him. So hopefully we can do that, because I certainly would like to hear from him. And meanwhile, we could probably open the phone lines. I have provided a link for this film. It's about a 30-minute film. When I watched it, at the end of the film, I was crying. And people who have listened to my program before understand that I am a very emotional person. And this was such an emotional film for me to watch, because, well, first of all, it featured some of the people that I have followed for years, John Pilger and other people that I really respect and admire for being the journalists that they are. They are very, they have been kind of in the forefront. And what Julian Assange did was simply, he was a whistleblower. He is a whistleblower. And it was fine up until Trump came in and decided that he had, that Assange had actually, wasn't a whistleblower, but had broken the Espionage Act. And what Assange was doing was providing documentation about the atrocities and the other things that we were doing in countries, in other countries. It's such an emotional film. Okay, I think we have him. Juan, are you with us?
I am with you. How are you, Deanna?
Oh, I'm fine. I was just explaining about how emotional I got when I watched the film, because I'm a very emotional person, and at the end of the film, I was crying. I'm very emotional right now just thinking about what you produced. I just can't thank you enough for doing this film, for making it, for having the courage to make it. And anyway, tell us where he's at. He's in prison. They're trying to extradite him, and the court that is going to be trying him, oh my gosh, it's the worst possible court that he could be in. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so I'm very sorry that I made you cry. I'm very sorry that I had to make this documentary to begin with, because this is the fundamental freedoms that we're talking about here. This is the First Amendment.
Yes.
This is our right to know what the government is doing in our names. I'm not an American, but it applies to all Western democracies. If this case goes ahead, we criminalize the act of journalism, the act of talking to sources, investigating what the government is doing, and giving that information to the public so that they can make informed decisions about who should run their institutions. And not only public institutions, also private ones. WikiLeaks has been publishing information about almost every kind of organization that exists. But right now, Julian Assange is being has been indicted under the Espionage Act. This is the first time that this happens in the in that publisher is charged under the Espionage Act for publishing war crimes. And we're talking about a very serious war crime. We're talking about torture, extortion, forces going into a house of a farmer, and tying them up, him and his extended family, including seven children. And
you're kind of cutting out a little bit. I'm not sure why.
Oh, sorry. Let me just get rid of. I'm just going to put you on. Is that better?
Yes, that's better. Thank you.
I'm very sorry.
That's all right.
I was using iPhone headphones, but they don't work.
Okay.
Where did I leave off so I can take it from there?
When you were just when you start talking about the atrocities. And
we're talking about information about coalition forces going into an Afghan a farmer's house where his extended family was, and tying them all up, including 5 to 7 children, and then executing them in cold blood, and then ordering a war plane to come and bomb the house so that they could eliminate the evidence. And this cable actually ended the Iraq occupation because the prime minister at the time decided to not renew the immunity of the troops in Iraq. Sorry, I said farmer in Afghanistan, I meant Iraq. So this was when Obama decided to take the troops out. Well, I'd say the majority of the troops, because they are still there. And they're still in Afghanistan. And this war has been going on for 19 years. And it is these behaviors, also behaviors that we saw in the cables, in the diplomatic circles. I mean, they went as far as asking the diplomats at the UN to gather the DNA of Ban Ki-moon, the head of the UN at the time. This is just atrocious behavior. They were spying on Angela Merkel. They were spying on other heads of state on their phones. I mean, this is crazy stuff that was going on their own allies. You know what I mean?
Right.
And this is why Julian Assange is being prosecuted. He's a journalist, and they are using the same old tactic that they've always used about him endangering lives. While there was a Pentagon, a task force of 110 people, specifically tasked for WikiLeaks. It was called the WikiLeaks Task Force, and they were investigating 24 hours a day if there was anyone they could find that this information hurt. And in 2013, during the Chelsea Manning trial, Colonel Robert Carr, he testified under oath that the government could not find any single person that was hurt by these publications. The only thing we saw was war crimes by the United States and the coalition forces. And now they are trying to for 10 years, they've been trying to silence the organization that published those documents. You want me to talk about what's been going on in the last couple of months?
Yes, please.
Okay, so he was kidnapped from the embassy in April, when Lenin Moreno and Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo made a deal with Moreno to give him a $4 million IMF loan for the head of Assange, and he did, and Assange was extracted from the embassy, and the Ecuadorians received the loan the day after.
Oh, that's so terrible.
He's been in Belmarsh Prison, which is a maximum security prison, kept under isolation for 18 months. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture asked the British government if he could visit Assange, and he went with two medical experts to examine Assange, and they found that he showed all the symptoms of psychological torture. They submitted a report to the United Kingdom, and the United Kingdom took 5 months to send a one-page document back to Mr. Meltzer, saying that they did not find his report accurate at all, and that they were not going to start an investigation. This is not the sort of report that response you give to a special rapporteur of the UN, where you are a member of. An investigation should have been brought forth, and his conditions should have been alleviated. I mean, he was in a jail cell for almost 24 hours a day, and has been since his arrest in April. In February, the first part of his hearing took place. That was only for a week. And in May, the second part of his hearing was due to commence, but coronavirus took place, and a decision was made to resume the hearing on September the 7th. During this time, every month there was an administrative hearing for the case. I went to several of them in person, and I also was given access over the phone to some of these proceedings. The phone connection was terrible. Sometimes we were connected to another court. Sometimes we would not be able to hear. Sometimes we were stuck hearing elevator music. So even though I have asthma and I'm a higher risk of catching COVID, I decided to start going in person to these proceedings to find out what was going on. And there was a special development during June the 24th, when the Ministry of Justice of the United States had published a superseding indictment. This superseding indictment was pretty much a carbon copy of the old one. It extended to some alleged activities that happened in 2011 and 2012 that had nothing to do with the original publications. These were alleged activities relating to public.
You've cut off.
Private intelligence company called Stratfor, and sorry, hello.
Yes. Okay. You cut out for a minute there.
Okay. So the superseding indictment had a new allegation. But what was interesting was it was published on the 24th of June, but in July, when there was another case management hearing, and neither the court nor the defense had been served those documents. And when the defense tried to talk about it, the court said it was impossible that they could talk about it because it wasn't given to court, so it's not part of the case. Then there was a second administrative hearing on the 14th of August, 3 weeks before the case was about to commence. And the day prior to that, Mr. Barr signed a new extradition for Julian Assange. So what they did was, in effect, remove the old extradition request that they had for Julian, basically rendering him free, and substituting it with a new extradition request. This was after all the evidence was submitted and all the deadlines had passed. There was no way that any of both parties could enter new evidence. And the U.S. used this loophole to introduce new alleged criminal behavior into court and not start a new proceeding, just follow with a new one. And what happened was Julian Assange was not given this new indictment, so he was not able to read it until the day of his hearing. He did not see lawyers for 6 months because of COVID situation. So for 6 months, Julian Assange was cut out from his defense team and entered into a new into the hearing without actually having been able to instruct his lawyers.
Wow.
And on the day of the hearing, on the 7th, the first part of the hearing was the defense trying to argue that these new allegations were not couldn't be present because they had not time to prepare. And in fact, Julian Assange wasn't even served the papers in prison until the day before the hearing.
Wow.
So the judge denied that because the prosecution argued that it was above the powers of the court. The judge agreed. And in the second part of the hearing, the defense asked for a motion of delay. Now, I want to stop for a second here. I have been going to these administrative hearings for months, and every single time I have seen the judge read out her predetermined ruling at the end of court. She doesn't type during the court, and she just reads out of a computer, which makes you really think that she's probably written that before she's gone into the court. Now, when the defense suddenly asked for a delay of the hearing until January, this caught the judge off guard, and she asked for the court to go on a break, a 15-minute break, which is actually about half an hour, 45 minutes. And when she came back, she had a written ruling, which she read, and she denied that motion. So Julian Assange is entering into this hearing without being able to properly prepare his defense, and being received that. In the hearing, in the last couple of days, we've been hearing two specific arguments that are going to be at play here. Was things that WikiLeaks did illegal, and is it a political prosecution? And this is very important because the extradition treaty between the United States and the UK forbids forbids political extraditions. So the defense has to make sure that they can prove that this is a political extradition. A witness, a political scientist, came on Wednesday. All the dates merge into one because it's been so crazy. He was very clear to say that the grand jury that was started in 2010 and started investigating into whether it was possible to bring espionage charges to Assange in the Obama administration, they decided that it was not possible to do this because it was impossible to differentiate what WikiLeaks did and what the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Guardian, the Spiegel did.
Right.
Because it's journalism, and it infringed upon the First Amendment. And the second thing, is it illegal or not illegal? The prosecution has been very careful to try and say that Julian is being prosecuted for names of informants that, it quote-unquote, published recklessly. Hello?
Juan, we're going to a quick three-minute break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
We are back with our guest, Juan Passarelli. He is the producer of Trump's War on Journalism, documented in his new film titled The War on Journalism, The Case of Julian Assange. It's a fabulous, fabulous film. It's a must-watch film, and I hope that every listener will view this film. It's amazing. you're just a genius at putting things together.
Thank you. Thank you. It took me about 15 tries. My brother says I'm a editor that does not like to cut. But I was very interested in the first advert you played about knowledge being power, because that's what Julian has for. That has been his goal, to inform the public so that they can make the right decisions with as much information as they can possibly have. And this is why he's being prosecuted, persecuted, I might say. I'm not entirely sure where I stopped. So I don't. Where do you want me to begin again?
The thing that bothers me so much is the fact that they are trying him in the only area where he will not get a fair trial. They are trying him in. Yes, go ahead and cover that. That is so irritating. That is not right. It's terrible.
So if you look at Google Maps and go onto the eastern court of East Virginia, you will see that it is a short driving distance from the Pentagon, the CIA, the Homeland Security, the FBI, and a whole bunch of contractors. So the jury that Julian would be facing is a population where 80% of these people work for these agencies or are family members of these agencies. So there is no way that he can get an unbiased jury in this court. He will also receive, the proceedings would be done in secret because he's a national security court. And it's actually called the espionage court. That's what they call it, where no national defendant has ever won a case. He's facing 175 years in prison. He would be put under special administrative measures, which means he would be locked up in solitary confinement under tortuous conditions, according to the UN. And he and his lawyers would not be able to even talk about the case to the public. So this would be done under complete secret. In this case, actually, case that will affect every single reader. The last expert we saw this week, Trevor Tim from the Freedom of the Press Foundation, he was saying that in classified information is something that journalists have and obtain every single day. They interact with government sources and they solicit information and publish it on the public's interest. And if this case goes ahead and he's actually tried and prosecuted for this, it would actually mean that not only any journalist that receives classified information willingly or unwillingly is committing a criminal offense, it could even span all the way up to readers. Imagine how many stories you have on your browser history that have contained some sort of classified information. This is how crazy this situation is actually is. This is the end of journalism and democracy as we know it. This is the founding fathers, you know, most crazy nightmare. George Orwell would be churning in his grave at this because it's worse than his book 1984.
Right. It is absolutely amazing because why did it happen under Trump? What is it that Trump has against Julian Assange that he would go after him like this? Is it because of Trump's connections or because what is it? What's with Trump?
Well, I mean, the Obama administration decided not to prosecute because there was no way to determine if the U.S. if what Julian Assange did was any different from what any other newspaper does.
Right.
Trump appointed a new head of the Ministry of Justice, and it seems like, well, in 2011, Trump pulled for the penalty, Assange. I don't know if many people know that, but there's a video of it, and it's in my documentary. He was very happy when the DNC emails were published, which highlighted high levels of corruption
right.
within the DNC that made three top members, top executives of the DNC have to quit because of them. And they also found quite a big corruption within the Clinton Foundation and other bits of corruption. And Trump was loving it. He was calling WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks, but I think this was an opportunistic way of seeing it. He was in an election, and he took it as a election point. You know, it was another way to attack Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
By far, this is not what WikiLeaks intended. WikiLeaks intended to bring information to the public that was of public concern, especially during the time when they were supposed to elect one, the person who was going to be in representing them.
Okay, Juan, we have to take another real quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll pick this up on the other side. WikiLeaks, when he was going after the Clinton administration and other people that Trump considered his enemies, quote unquote, but then things changed.
Yeah, in 2017, WikiLeaks published the Vault 7, which was a set of tools that CIA uses to spy on targeted on individuals on a target-to-target basis. It is different from what the NSA does, which is a draft. It showed how people could be on their phones or televisions or computers and even cars. It went as far as saying, you know, they could press the accelerator or the brake whenever they wanted to create targeted assassination.
Wow.
And at that point in time, Mike Pompeo becomes the director of the CIA, and in infamous first speech, he dedicated it to a publisher, to WikiLeaks, calling WikiLeaks a non-state hostile intelligence agency, and saying that people like Julian Assange don't deserve the right, the protections of the First Amendment. And in that speech, actually, encapsulates what is actually going on in his indictment. He's being indicted under the Espionage Act, which doesn't have a defense on the First Amendment. And there has been an affidavit by Barr saying that Julian Assange would not be protected by the First Amendment because he's a foreigner. Now, I don't recall ever reading in the First Amendment that it excludes a foreigner if he's in the United States.
Right.
And Julian Assange is not even in the U.S. He never committed a crime inside the U.S. He didn't commit a crime in the United Kingdom where he is. The United States is overreaching its power and its laws into other countries.
Indeed.
You wanted to make maybe finish on why Trump is pushing this.
Right.
Well, we know that Stephanie was talking about Trump's contempt for the media. He suggested that they've counted every attack that Trump has done on Twitter, on the media, and it's over 2,200 attack, calling the enemy of the people. He feels threatened by the media, and he feels threatened by organizations like WikiLeaks that disclose that are crimes. That's why this is a political case. I mean, it doesn't get more political than espionage.
Right. Now, does he have any direct quotes from Trump expressing him wanting to do this, to put him on trial?
Well, there's only the quotes from 2011 when he was asked about WikiLeaks, and he said that he deserved the death penalty.
Whoa!
I think I put that on my documentary.
Yes, it is.
Now, after the election, he was asked about WikiLeaks, and suddenly by magic, he forgot that WikiLeaks existed. He said, "I know nothing about WikiLeaks. It's Assange fellow. I don't know nothing about him." But he was flaunting it when it was in the election. So I think Trump is opportunistic. If it's good for him at the moment, he'll take it, as a businessman does. When it's not good enough anymore, he'll just drop it, you know?
But this isn't just about Assange. This is about every single journalist. Anybody that writes a book, it's an overall assault on journalism.
Yes, and on the First Amendment.
Right.
And not only journalists, anybody that wants to speak would be if they happen to come across some sort of classified information, they would be committing a crime. As I mentioned earlier, even readers of the newspapers or television or, web articles would potentially be committing a crime if they read something that is classified. This is a case that is unprecedented in its nature, and it has implications that could change the way the United States is run completely from open democracy to something that is completely authoritarian.
Wow. Now, did he have access to the DNC emails? Was there any kind of situation where maybe Seth Rich gave him these emails?
Well, WikiLeaks has a policy of never disclosing their sources.
Uh-huh.
There's been a whole lot of theories on who actually gave WikiLeaks the emails. Some people have some people, including Hillary Clinton, have tried to pin it on the Russian government.
Oh, right.
Some people have said that it's the rich. Some people pointed at a rogue hacker called Guccifer 2.0. The fact of the matter is that the way that WikiLeaks is engineered, it is engineered for people to anonymously drop information into their Dropbox, which is encrypted, and it has a whole swathe of steps to try to avoid WikiLeaks knowing the source, because for WikiLeaks the source is not important and their motivations are not important. What is important is what is contained in those documents and if those documents are real. And those two criteria were met in the DNC emails. Actually, there's three criteria. The documents were real, the documents contained crimes, and they were of public interest, and that's where they published. WikiLeaks has never revealed a source. There's the Chelsea Manning case, where she confessed to being the source, but if you see Julian Assange's speeches all the way up to 2017, he would refer to Chelsea Manning as the alleged source of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks has never said any source is their source. So I doubt that we will know ever who the actual source of those documents were. And I think that's a great marker of the values that WikiLeaks has. And it's actually those values. I want to pause here and just say, because I've known this man for 10 years, and he's been vilified for 10 years by the apparatus. He's a program for 5 countries. This man is a kind man. He is a principled man, and he really is very courageous. And it's this courage and principles that have landed him where he is. He will not betray them. He will give the public the information they need, whatever the cost, personal cost is to him. And that's where, why he's there. There's been reports of Trump allegedly sending somebody over to the embassy to deal with him if he revealed the source of Russia, or sorry, if he revealed the source of the DNC emails and said that it wasn't Russian. The only thing Julian Assange has said about the DNC is that it was not a state actor. That is the only actual truthful thing we know from his mouth that about. So we can, I can't confirm or deny that Seth Rich, who unfortunately lost his life, is or not the source of the material.
Wow. Well, I think that the material, it doesn't, to me, the source is not that important. It's the information that he has revealed, that was so upsetting to me, in the fact that what the U.S. military is doing in other countries, that is what really impacted me. And I think that the U.S. military is acting supposedly for our benefit. But in the film, you talk about or show or describe the people that are being slaughtered, that are being tortured, that are being killed, and for what? For what reason? These are people who have not done anything, who do not deserve to have their country invaded, do not deserve to have their property bombed. This is what really touched me with the film. And I believe that this is what he was trying to share is, hey, people have to know what the U.S. government is doing. And I think that is... Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. I mean, I know him very well, and I know that one of his very core values. And he said, if wars can be started by lies, then truth can come... Sorry, then can be brought on by truth.
Yes.
And that's exactly what he's been aiming to do.
Yes.
Something that is astonishing to me is... that and it came out in the courts recently is that, well, maybe all your listeners don't know about this, but Obama had an intelligence meeting every Tuesday, and he would sign his
Could you repeat that?
Right when I'm going to talk about Hill List. Yes.
Right.
Yes, for me?
Could you repeat that? Because broken up a little bit.
Yes, so I was just talking that Obama every Tuesday had an intelligence meeting where he signed a piece of paper with a number of names on it. Those names were people that were going to be assassinated that week.
Whoa.
By drones in Pakistan, a country that was not at war with the United States. The United States has a couple of wars that are declared wars, but it has a whole bunch of other wars that are going on that they don't call wars, they call conflicts, where they're killing people all the time, including the worst casualty of this century, the worst humanitarian catastrophe that there is right now, which is Yemen, and they're arming and training Saudi Arabians to keep on bombing Yemen whilst Yemeni children are dying of starvation in mass. And WikiLeaks have helped put an end to this Obama assassination program by disclosing the information. So this is the type of thing that WikiLeaks and Julian have been known for, and why he's such a big target for so many people that make a lot of money in wars. You know, the military industrial complex has only gotten richer and richer and richer every year. And you have to fight of every bomb, of every bullet, of every missile, of every warplane, by something. And the only way you can justify it is by bombing and firing those bullets at somebody. So this is a systemic problem that needs to be addressed by somebody that has a lot of courage in government to try to separate these powers. You know, the secret intelligence services, the military, the contractors, the politicians' revolving door, where they go into government, make legislation, and then they go out to get really cozy jobs at merry contractors and arms manufacturers, and they just sell weapons more and more. And it just happens that politicians that go to these companies get the biggest contracts, and then they create more weapons. And now the U.S. just signed, I think last year, the biggest arms sale in history to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a long history of setting records of big arms sales. They did it with the Thatcher in the 1980s, and then they buy a third of, two-thirds actually, of all the weaponry that the British sell, and they buy a whole lot of weaponry and training and resources from the U.S., and the U.S. helps them in these wars, which have nothing to do with the United States.
None of the wars in the Middle East have anything to do with the United States. That's my opinion.
I think you're right.
We shouldn't be there. We never should have gone there to begin with. We went there on a lie. You know, the weapons of mass destruction lie, which weren't there, when we went into Iraq in March of 2003. Yeah. And Afghanistan, we were there immediately, and it's horrible. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and Afghanistan is now the longest standing war for the United States, with 19 years
exactly.
ongoing.
Exactly, and they're growing, and of course the poppy production in Afghanistan keeps that going, because that's basically what they're doing is. Doing drug running and all that kind of thing. So Assange is a hero in my opinion. And we have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest this hour is Juan Passarelli. He is the producer of Trump's War on Journalism. He's got this marvelous, wonderful film that is a must-watch. It is, you did such a fabulous job putting that together. I just get emotional every time I think about it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's important for me to say that it is free for anybody to watch. If you just Google the war on journalism, the Assange case, it'll be, you know, it's right up there in Google. So anybody can watch it. It's a 38-minute long film. And it really shows you, what you're like for you and your children. If Julian Assange is prosecuted, we will lose our ability to, be able to know what our governments do in our name, because handling classified information, which journalists do every day, and soliciting from sources information, and talking to sources and understanding what the government is doing will become illegal. So your right to know what your government is doing and be informed about what they're doing and how and who you should elect and what your taxes are being spent on, and
yes.
what your vote and mandate is giving them, you would lose all that. Democracy would die.
Yes, and I think that that's why it's so important that people know what they're doing, what the military is doing, what the government is doing, all the spying, the surveillance, just everything for a number of years. It didn't just start. It goes back to MK Ultra and all the nonsense that the CIA was involved with all of their projects and all of the people that they've harmed. It's not just in other countries, but in this country. All the people that have.
Yes, I mean, this has been long going on. I mean, from there's the very famous case of Daniel Ellsberg when he's the whistleblower of Pentagon Papers.
Right.
He worked with the Washington Post. It's interesting to think about this because the journalists were so involved in this leak that they even had the key to the place where the documents were stored, and they were helping Daniel Ellsberg copy this material physically. So this is way more than Julian Assange did. And the government tried to bring the journalists an espionage charge on them. But as in so many other cases, including cases that go back a couple of years, are we going to break?
Well, you know, our hour is up, Juan. Yes, it went by really fast. Thank you so very much for the film, and thank you for what you're doing, for your courage, and your brilliance in making this film. Thank you so much, Juan.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.